And welcome. We are changing to the language of Shakespeare from the language of Cervantes. Sorry, I always say the same thing. But that is because we are speaking to Elizabeth Electra, who is a fantastic singer, artist, and much more. And as I was saying earlier, it's kind of quite exclusive because we're going to be talking about an album that is coming out next year. I've already heard it. It's fantastic. Elizabeth, how are you doing?
Thank you. I'm good. Thanks, Ben. How are you?
Good, good, good. As I was saying on email, I put on the album Hyper Sigil on Friday morning, and it really kind of put a rocket under my day, which was a very good thing.
That's really good to hear.
So up until about 2 months ago, I had no idea what a sigil was. I've been watching I've forgotten what it's called, Agatha All Along, the series. And I've now got a idea, so I keep on going on about it. But to anyone that hasn't been watching it, what is a sigil, and indeed a hyper sigil?
So a sigil is a symbol that you make. It's a magical symbol. So you would kind of condense down a phrase. Say you wanted to stop smoking. You would write out, I quit smoking, and you would remove all of the consonants. And then you would have you'd remove all the vowels and you'd have just the consonants left. And then you make a symbol out of it. And the point is to forget what the original intention is. And then you charge it, which means burning it, or there's all sorts of other ways, which I won't go into, to charge a sigil. And then it's kind of I see it as a kind of, it's like that liminal moment where you're kind of not present, you know, it's kind of that moment where you're forgetting who you are and you're forgetting what it is that you desire, which makes it easier maybe to attain it. But a hyper sigil is a piece of art that also functions as a spell. And it was actually coined by Grant Morrison, the comic writer. So The Invisibles, which I actually literally have on the shelf right in front of me, is a hyper sigil. So it's a piece of art that functions as a spell.
So that's a very strong name to give your new record, right? How did you come up with it?
It just was always called that. So when there was just never another name for it. I never had a different, you know, it was just there from the start. And I think because you know, I see art, I see making music as a kind of transformative process for me. You know, I feel like the reason I make music is because I evolve and I change through the practice. So it just kind of was there. It was just a name that made sense.
Do you compare music making or artistic creation to sorcery?
I mean, it is, isn't it? You're conjuring something really out of nothing. You know, I remember when that Beatles documentary came out, and I couldn't watch it because it was too long and I was bored. But a lot of people, you know, I saw people being like, I can't believe they just made that up. And I'm like, how do you think music happens? We're all just making things up, all artists. That's what we do.
So one thing you've said with Hyper Sigil, you wanted to do a really good pop record, which you very much have done. What relation do you have to pop music? Is it something you've always listened to?
Yes, yeah, very much so. I remember, I grew up in rural France, and we had, you know, it was the music that came over from the UK was also always like big pop music. So I remember being really little and hearing Charles and Eddie or Prince or stuff when I was a little kid in the 90s, and it would be playing on the radio, and it was always just, you know, the really commercial stuff. And the music that my parents listened to was classical music. So the only music that I was exposed to that wasn't classical was pop.
Did they sort of not approve of pop music, or were they quite happy for you to listen to it? They just didn't listen to it themselves.
Yeah, no, there was a very vocal disapproval. my mum's kind of come round to it now a bit.
I wonder though if that changes the relationship you have with pop, because it makes it somehow kind of illicit, you know, even more attractive.
I think you're right. You know, my mum and my sister are both opera singers. There's still like classical music is still kind of the thing in our family. You know, or my brother's into like quite serious music. So it is, in a way, like maybe it's a rebellion.
What do you mean by serious music when you talk about your brother's tastes?
Like Ortakus.
Okay.
Ricardo Villalobos, you know, kind of like music, I suppose. I think that the, you know, I see pop, I take pop very seriously, but I know that a lot of people see pop music as something that maybe lacks substance, but I think any music can be substantial.
But the thing is, there's a parallel between sort of classical musicians, because they have a lot of discipline and they have to rehearse, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of world building behind a lot of classical music works. Same thing with could be said about pop music, isn't it? You know, to the great pop artists, from Bjork to Beyonce, they are architects of their own worlds. Do you think what you saw your mother and your sister doing has fed into what you're doing to construct your own career?
Yeah, for sure. Like, my sister is always saying, you know, that she's a vocal athlete, and she's, you know, I see that discipline. I'm very disciplined myself. I'm a prolific writer, and I work every single day on my work. So I suppose, yeah, I think for any musician, you know, there has to be discipline if you want to make it your life's work, you know.
Where do you stand on the old inspiration versus perspiration debate?
I think it has to be both. You know, personally, I have like, I write a lot, and through that, then I will find that I write things that I really love. But also, if I'm not feeling inspired, I'm not going to force myself. I'm lucky that I do have a lot of very creative bursts, you know.
I'm fascinated by your mother and your sister both being opera singers. Obviously, you're a singer as well, and you've got a very strong voice. Did you learn opera as well?
I had some classical training. So when I was at school, I had a classical teacher. But I never wanted to sing, you know. I sang castrato parts, and it was and Baroque music. And I found it, just because that suited my range, I found it quite boring. And so I kind of would sing like jazz standards instead. But I did do some exams and things, but I'm just not very good at music theory. So I remember being in exams and I would be having to do like sight singing, and I would just completely wing it. And the people examining me would be looking at me with like really wide eyes, like, she really does not have a clue what she's doing. Hmm. So I did have some training, but I think I just wasn't really kind of into it.
Going back to pop, like, which were sort of the kind of legendary pop acts for you when you were growing up, the ones you really related to?
Apart from Charles and Eddie, of course.
I mean, yeah, like, I guess, I loved Britney Spears, was like really, you know, I was definitely her target demographic. And, you know, people like Madonna, Prince, Bjork, really huge for me. Destiny's Child, I was obsessed with. So just kind of a lot of variety. Yeah.
And what about modern pop stars?
So I think that there's a few really amazing artists. I'm really into Chappell Roan. And have... My friend played me her a few years ago, and I thought, that song, My Kink Is Karma, I just loved it straight away. I thought she was really good. But I'm a huge, like, quite mega Lana Del Rey fan. She is, like, it for me, you know. From the beginning, I'm a huge, huge fan. And I've been to see Taylor Swift twice this year.
Twice?
Wow. And I like her, but, like, I don't love her. I think she's really excellent, but it gets a little bit much after a while. It's just, yeah.
See, one of the things I like about Lana Del Rey is the kind of world building in the music. And it feels a bit like you're doing the same thing with your music, right? Like, so what, for example, is an Elizabeth Electra book, if that makes sense?
Sorry, do you mean a book that I would read, or?
Well, a book that fits into your world, you know, like.
I think probably Circe by Madeline Miller. And I have to pick that one because I literally have a song written after I read it, you know. It's just so beautiful. It's a retelling of the story of Circe. And it's stunning. It's like, I think, one of the best contemporary fiction novels.
Okay.
I'm so sorry, but internet is really patchy.
I know.
We think it might have been our connection.
Okay.
But I don't know if you could hear us, we were talking about the album, which was recorded alongside Johnny Scott, who's known for his work with Church's Ladytron and The Kills. And we went into a bit of a reverie about how much we like Ladytron.
I love Ladytron.
They're great, aren't they?
I'm a huge fan. I love them so much. They were just a huge thing for me when I was a kid. That Party Monster soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
Are they good reference points for the album?
I mean, I think that probably it's inevitable that it would have an influence, because I am a really big fan, and obviously Johnny has worked a lot with Helen with her solo stuff, which is really great, and also with the band, and co-written some stuff with Ladytron and played with them. So I guess there's probably an influence there, and I think, you know, they're really everything. So all the synths on Hypersigil are like 99.9% analog, and so I guess there's going to be a relationship there as well.
My sort of impression is it feels like a lot larger than your debut album Mercurial. Was that like your intention to make it kind of big?
Yeah, I think it was. I think I just, I wanted to, it was to be big. I think everything that I was listening to, and also just the feeling, making it kind of like during the end of the pandemic, I think was really an influence on it being kind of maybe more intense and having a more sort of energy in it.
Because you had that energy inside you had to get out, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I was interested that the album was recorded in the countryside. Do you think that kind of countryside feel comes across? For me, it feels more city.
No, it's definitely not. It's definitely more of a city. I mean, I wrote it all. So I wrote the whole thing in the city, and then I actually produced it to quite a sort of, you know, everything was like really formed before I went to record it with Johnny. So it probably has, you know, we were listening, like in the studio, we're listening to a lot of like Nine Inch Nails and The Cure and Depeche Mode and stuff that is more kind of, has more of an industrial, not so much The Cure, but the other two, feeling. So I think that, you know, the very first, the first song that was recorded was Yearning. And Johnny was like, you know, he went out and was like hitting bits of metal and stuff. So.
Well, I was going to say Yearning was the song, it's the first song on the album. And that was the song that kind of knocked me off my feet on the the Friday morning in a very enjoyable way. You mentioned The Cure. We were going to speak, I think, a couple of weeks ago, but you got COVID from watching the two Cure gigs in London. Firstly, are you feeling better?
I am better, yeah. I'm like 99% better now, thankfully. But yeah, I knew it was a really big risk to go to two gigs in 1 week, and I did wear a mask. But I still, unfortunately, got COVID, but it was worth it to see my favourite band twice. So.
I was going to say, how were those gigs?
Oh, unbelievable. I mean, the first one, we got in and we were the first people in the room. So we were literally right at the front. And I've seen The Cure like 20 odd times.
Yeah.
But to see them right in front of me, and like, it was unbelievable, you know, a completely different experience. And then the gig at the Troxy was just beautiful. It was kind of like a, you know, it's kind of like a, in various parts, like it was just incredible. You know, they kind of went off stage about four times. They played the whole new record and then did sort of several movements after that. It was incredible.
Wow. Did you go backstage to say hi?
No, I was at the after party though. So I said hi there.
Uh-huh.
So I was going to ask, like, where do you feel that you fit in the kind of modern pop world? Do you fit?
And I mean, this is something I think about a lot, and I don't know if I do really. I think what I'm doing is quite idiosyncratic, and I think that we're living in a world more and more that doesn't necessarily celebrate idiosyncrasy, and I think a lot of that has to do with algorithms and the uncertainty around the industry and all of that stuff. So I struggle to sort of feel sometimes where I fit, and I definitely experience that kind of thing, but I'd rather be making something that was really authentic to me than trying to sort of adapt what I do in order to be able to fit into a world that you know, I would rather be true to what I want to do and kind of fit in.
And is there a song on the new album? I mean, I know this is like asking people to choose their favourite child, but is there like one song on the new album that where you really thought, okay, that's it, I've nailed it, that's like, that's me?
I don't know, really. There's a ballad called Surround Me that I'm really proud of. But I don't think I ever feel that. I think that I am always kind of seeking something else when I write. You know, I'm never completely satisfied. As happy as I am with what I've written, as proud as I am with everything I make, I don't think I could be like, that's me, because I also think we change, you know. So maybe that was me like 2 years ago when I recorded the album. Maybe it's not me now, I don't know.
Are you one of those people that has to be sort of dragged out of the studio and someone's got to be like, no, it's good, leave it?
Yeah, no, I'm good at finishing things, but I'm not. But if I could, I would just be recording music all the time, because I write constantly, and I would just be making music. I would be I'd be releasing like 3 albums a year.
No bad thing.
Tell us about Silver Moth, your other musical project you're involved in, including your husband Stuart Braithwaite and about five other musicians, including you two. Uh-huh. I understand that this project started through Twitter, am I right?
Yeah, so it was during the pandemic, and my friend Nick and I were having this conversation on Twitter, which we were having quite often, about wanting to get out of the UK. You know, it was like post-Brexit, everything felt really heavy. And I don't know, we just kind of hatched this plan to go to the Hebrides to record, because Stuart knew about this studio, and it turns out that some of the other people we recorded with also knew about it. So we decided to book.
And what is it about that studio that everyone's sort of, there's this studio?
Well, it's right on the edge of the water. It's an old crab factory that's been converted into a studio, and it's in the middle of nowhere. Like, you're really, it's just this black sea. Yeah. And it's really beautiful, and it's really remote. And I think after being stuck in a city in a flat with no garden for 2 years, I was like ready to be in nature.
Wow. What's the name of the studio?
It's called Black Bay.
Black Bay.
Lovely name.
Yeah. It's fantastic. And Pete, who runs it, is just wonderful and so good. So I would recommend it to anybody.
But my question about Silver Moth, because usually people form side projects or bands with musicians who are, you know, close by. It's like, oh, you've got time off. But it seems that you're all scattered all over the country. How do you manage to get anything moving forward when, you know, people have different agendas, there are other bands they play in and mm-hmm. stuff like that? Because it seems like a mammoth kind of task to get together to get something put to tape.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously the original project happened when nothing much was going on in the music industry, so we all had time to go and record. But since then, it's just, you know, everybody's pretty chilled out and kind of respects each other's time. And if somebody doesn't want to do something, we don't force it. And, you know, I think we were all really on the same page when it comes to what we want to do with it. So it makes it easier. And so far, everything's been, you know, the tour we did last year and the tour we did this year, everything has been really straightforward. And yeah, they're just lovely people. And I feel really honored to get to play music with them.
That's great.
I like the fact that something positive came out of Twitter as well. It feels like a very long time ago that anything like
the
that happened.
The good
old
days.
Oh, God, yeah. When God. It wasn't, you know. Back when we had a pandemic, wasn't that lovely?
Yeah. brought us together rather than
Jesus. You have a Patreon on which you say you're creating music, art, tarot, and esoteric studies. What are esoteric studies exactly?
Well, to be honest, it's mostly just music and art. I mean, I've been like into, you know, the esoteric, the occult, since I was like a kid. You know, I got my first tarot deck when I was 13. So I'm kind of, it was my job for years. When I was at uni, I was a tarot reader.
Wow.
In a shop in Brighton. I went to uni in Brighton, and I was a tarot reader in the shop locally. And so, you know, and I've always just been, since I was a kid, I've just had a really intense fascination with anything, you know, other. And so, yeah, I know a lot about, you know, various different areas of occultism, but recently, in terms of my Patreon, it's just been mostly because, you know, I'm one of these people, I can only really focus on one thing really well.
Yeah.
So it's mostly just been music. And I guess everything, all the other stuff will feed into the music, but I don't want to compromise.
What kind of people were generally going to see you as a tarot reader? Was it mainly older people who wanted to contact, you know,
it's not about contacting dead people, is it? I don't think.
No, sorry. That's different. Sorry. Like Whoopi Goldberg and Ghost. What is she? She's a.
what are you thinking of? Tarot's
like reading your fortune. Fortune teller. Yeah. All right. Oh, so yeah. So was it generally like an age group, or was it just like a full representation of humanity?
It was really broad, but it was mostly, I would say, 90% women. And that's been my experience, is that most of the people, and I've done, you know, thousands of readings, and it's mostly women, you know, a very small number of men and other people. But it's very much, I think a lot of the, I mean, it was an interest, because I was in Brighton, you know, Brighton already attracts some quite eccentric people. So a lot of my clients were quite eccentric, and it was definitely the most colorful kind of job I've had. In terms of the clientele and the kind of things that they were interested in and what they wanted to know about. And I had some pretty crazy questions.
Wow. So the album is out in 2025. What is it, January? Am I right?
No, well, it was going to be January, but I've pushed it back. Just because, you know what, I'm completely independent. I do everything myself. And I was just, after releasing Desire, I found myself really burned out and really tired. And I kind of wanted to give myself, instead of pushing to release another single, then, you know, an album in January, I wanted to give myself the time to be able to do things properly. So it's going to come out March, April-ish, but there's going to be new music in January.
And you can already hear Desire and Broken Promises as well, which was released in 2023 and which also features on the album. Any plans? I feel bad asking this if you were feeling sort of tired and burned out. But any plans to sort of play live or around the release?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'm already feeling way better than I was, by the way.
Good.
But yeah, no, I love playing live, and I'm definitely going to be doing a UK tour for sure, which I'll be announcing hopefully not too long.
Foreign dates?
Nothing as yet. I'm sure, you know, Brexit has made things a little bit harder, but you know, if any offers come in, I will absolutely do it. I've played abroad a couple of times this year. It's been great.
Oh, cool. Where did you play?
I played in Belgium at the Ancienne Belgique, opening for Placebo, which was like a dream gig. It was amazing. And their fans are really lovely. And then I played in the States. I did some of the unofficial South by Southwest shows.
Great. Well, we look forward to that. The album is excellent. Thank you so much. You know what I was going to ask? One extra thing. Sorry, this is because I've been going on about it with Johan and Sergi, and they've had to endure it. Have you been watching Agatha all along?
I actually did watch it. I had watched it when I had COVID.
And did you like
really
it?
I actually loved it. I mean, it's stupid. It's kind of, yeah, but I loved it.
And
I
that really tune's pretty banging, no? The tune...
It is really good.
See, I have this vision that come like next summer festival season, all of the bands are going to be playing that tune. But then I think I'm maybe confusing my taste with
Inner
those.
Desire.
Yeah, exactly. But it'd be amazing. It'd be amazing.
I'll do a cover of it just for you, Ben.
Thank you. I was about to say something else, but that would entirely reveal the plot of Agatha all along. So I won't say it. I won't say it.
Spoiler alert.
But that's thoroughly recommended. Your album is thoroughly recommended. Thank you so much for coming on, and hope to see you around these parts sometime.
Yeah, I hope so too. Thank you so much. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.